During this summer holiday season, Pope Benedict is spending his days at the papal summer residence of Castel Gandolfo, set in the Alban Hills, some 30 kilometres south of the capital. Unlike previous years when he has travelled up north to spend some time in the mountains, this year the Pope went in early July straight to this picturesque summer residence overlooking the shores of Lake Albano, carrying on a tradition that began with Pope Urban VIII back in the 1600s. Each summer, local people from this hill town of around 9,000 inhabitants enthusiastically welcome the Pope, who greets them each Sunday after reciting the midday Angelus prayer from a balcony overlooking a courtyard inside the papal palace. But just what do we know about the history and contents of this summer residence of the Pope's that includes the 17th century papal palace, the adjoining Villa Barberini, and the extensive gardens inside the complex? How many people know, for example, that ancient archaeological findings dating back to the 16th century BC have been found in the area of Castel Gandolfo, that the beautiful gardens of the papal palace include the underground remains of a villa belonging to the Roman Emperor Domitian, or that the complex contains a working farm producing milk, yogurt and other foodstuffs that are sold in the Vatican supermarket today? Well, to find out more about these and other fascinating details surrounding the history and architecture of the pontifical complex at Castel Gandolfo, here's Joan Lewis, our regular Vatican watcher who works for the Catholic television network EWTN. She's talking to Sister Janet Ferns and begins by telling us why Castel Gandolfo has been such a special place for popes down the centuries.
Pope John Paul II affectionately called this summer residence, and sometimes other parts of the year residence, he called it Vatican II, Vatican number two. And Castel Gandolfo is about 25 miles outside of Rome. It is one of what are called the Castelli Romani, or the Roman hill towns, in the Alban Hills south of Rome. Just little teensy, wonderful, picturesque towns that dot these hills and overlook Lake Albano, which is actually a lake on the extinct crater of a volcano.
And very pretty.
Oh, a very beautiful lake, very placid. If you go to Castel Gandolfo and sit in one of the main squares there, just off of the public side of the papal palace, there's certain times of the year where you can sit there and have a porchetta and a glass of wine. You're just overlooking this gorgeous, wonderful, placid lake. It's very beautiful.
Almost navy blue.
Yeah. And, you know, if you really need a change of pace and to just kind of settle back and recharge your batteries, this is the place to do it. And if you ever visited which I have on a number of occasions, the Apostolic Palace there, the Vatican Observatory and the Vatican Gardens, you know why the Pope enjoys it, any Pope enjoys it. And I know the first two times I was there, I thought, why don't they just move the Vatican to Castel Gandolfo? It's so wonderful and peaceful. It couldn't take all of us, and I suppose that would be a good thing. But the name, actually, Castel Gandolfo, comes from the Gandolfi family. They were originally from Genoa. And about 1200, on land that they bought there, they built a small square fortress with crenellated walls. You can see part of this today. And an inner courtyard and towers and adjacent gardens and so forth. And they lived there for quite some time, but then in the following century, so 1300s, the Savelli family bought this, and they owned it on and off until 1596, and in that year, they owed Pope Clement VIII a debt which they could not pay, so he got their land. They paid him by giving him this land, and he took the property and in 1604 declared it the patrimony of the Holy See. So over the years, something I won't go into because it would probably be less interesting for our listeners, but over the years, the building was expanded and added to, and chapels and famous names designing facades and rooms within it. And that has just made it the beautiful, lovely home that it is today, very much on a par inside with the Apostolic Palace here in Rome. And perhaps outside, again, because it has this view of Lake Albano, in many, many ways, much more inviting. And I know that there are, for example, apartments very close to the Apostolic Palace in that part of the land that's known as Villa Barberini. There are private apartments, small, for the Cardinal Secretary of State, for the Prefect of the Papal Household, and I know they enjoy it immensely, too. There's this tremendous, wonderful, not just beauty, but intimacy.
And restfulness.
Oh, sure. The traffic. I mean, what traffic? You know, a traffic jam is like a block long, single file of cars, and something that's doable. Well, doable until big crowds go in, you know, to see the Holy Father. But in any event, at a certain point, the land which comprised the Apostolic Palace and a small percentage of gardens overlooking the lake, there was an acquisition of land under Pius XI. He helped restore some of the buildings that were on this land that had been been degraded to a certain degree. And there was also a farm there, which he made, and still is today, a very active, self-supporting farm. They make their own yogurt. When I visited, they gave me samples of everything. They make their own yogurt and their milk and then olive oil, just obviously in certain times of the year. And my understanding is a truck arrives every single morning at 6 o'clock in Rome that has the fresh produce from this farm, and it's brought to the Apostolic Palaces and to certain of the cardinals that have the privilege of getting all these fresh goodies from the farm. So it's a wonderful thing to see. And the farm is part of this new addition of land that came under Pius XI, what was called Villa Barberini. Very often we think of the word villa as referring just to a building. In America, a family lives in a single-family home. In Italy, that would be called a villa. Many times a villa is also very big in the sense of like a mansion, a huge estate. But really, a villa is the home and the land around it. So that's what this Villa Barberini was, buildings and land. And the acquisition of this brought the size of Castel Gandolfo up to 55 hectares, so 11 hectares bigger than Vatican City State. Now, another part, and a very active part, of Castel Gandolfo all year round, even when the Holy Father, when he's there or not there, is the Vatican Observatory. It's very beautiful to visit. It used to be in Rome. The city lights then made it impossible for astronomers to see with all the lights of the city. They moved to Castel Gandolfo. A lot of work is still done there, and they have amazing telescopes. But the real Vatican Observatory and the really profound work that it does is actually in Tucson, Arizona. With the improved technology, the more delicate and powerful instruments became, the more you needed to work in a totally dark atmosphere, not the lights of a city coming under you and influencing what you could see.
Now, Castel Gandolfo has got some special link, hasn't it, with the Second World War?
This is a wonderful story. It does indeed have a link. When you had, especially in 1944, after the landing at Anzio, you had the citizens of Castel Gandolfo, whose own lives possibly were at risk by staying in their homes in the hill towns. They had been allowed to stay on the grounds of Castel Gandolfo. No one from the other towns, but just the residents of Castel Gandolfo could stay on the grounds of the palace. And Pope Pius XII was a great lover of Castel Gandolfo and, as a matter of fact, spent a lot of time at this residence, except for World War II. But again, the land was given to the citizens because it had the status of extraterritoriality. So it was given to protect the citizens of Castel Gandolfo. And to give you some idea of the size and what you can see, especially when you're roaming through the gardens. The gardens are some of the most spectacular I have seen in my years on this earth and in my travels. And not that many people see them. beautifully, beautifully manicured.
Are they open to the public?
No, they're not. They're not open to the public. I mean, I wanted to do a story one day for the Vatican Information Service and went out there and spent the day. And the director of the villas, Saverio Petrillo, allowed me to take pictures to my heart's content. And hours and hours and hours we wandered the premises. And the shrubbery, the flowers, the trees. There are trees. There were cypress trees, which were, this is when you kind of want television so you can see gestures. Cypress trees, which were grown up and then bent over into each other to form an arch. And so what they did in planting all these trees and then bending them over to form an arch, you had a replica, but in trees, of the Roman aqueducts. It's absolutely astonishing.
That's amazing.
It really, really is. The color, the beauty, the fine, it's almost like looking at lace, except that it's flowers and trees and shrubs and beautifully, beautifully taken care of. And
how many people work in Castel Gandolfo?
There's about 60 people for the farm, for the gardens and everything else, and only about 20 live there. So Dr. Petrillo, for example, would be one of those people. And but some of your farmers, other people live in town, come to work. Only a handful, two dozen, actually live on the property. But two of the amazing things about the gardens are, there's 102, but we can't talk about them all. Part of the gardens, a very small part, was designed by Bernini. Believe it or not, we think of him...
Same fellow as the columns in St. Peter's.
Exactly. We think of Bernini and the altar and St. Peter's and many other things, but he did design part of the gardens, and I guess there's kind of a real logic in that. If you can work with stone and marble, couldn't you work with something that is living? But what you do see as you walk throughout the gardens, in addition to what I've, the hedges and the flowers and fountains, there was a beautiful part of the gardens with the statue of Our Lady, where John Paul loved to just walk back and forth and say his rosary. But one part of the property is on land, the Emperor Domitian. He was the emperor from 81 to 96. He had built... Now, you're going to think I've got my figures wrong. He built a 14-square-kilometer villa on this site. And Dr. Petrillo showed me, we walked along where some of the walls of this were in the gigantic rooms. Only a few walls are actually available as you go now to visit it today. But 14 kilometers, square kilometers of rooms and of the gardens and of walking areas.
That's amazing.
The most astonishing thing that I saw, and again, if this was television, we could hold up a picture, so I'll just have to do it with words. The crypto portico. It's in near perfect condition, 2,000 years after it was built, and it's reached by a staircase built into the gardens, and it was constructed to provide the emperor and his guests with a cool place to walk in the summer. Just imagine going into a huge underground tunnel. Except that one end of it is solid, is closed. The other end, you exit and enter from the other end. High up on the walls of the tunnel on one side, our openings for windows, they were filled with alabaster. And that let the light in, but it kept the heat out. So this crypto portico built below the earth was a very cool place. You and I know how
and
it can be in the summer.
And color from alabaster windows is beautiful.
To go in today is an experience and a half. I had never, ever before or after seen anything like the crypto portico. All of the gardens, all of Castel Gandolfo is very, very special.
Thanks there to our regular Vatican watcher, Joan Lewis, talking to Sister Janet Ferns about the papal summer residence of Castel Gandolfo. And Joan will be back at this same time next week with another edition of Joan Knows.